It all began with Cassini. A few weeks ago, the space probe Cassini ended its 20-year mission circling planet Saturn. It changed its orbit from around the planet so that it could crash through the orbit and burn itself up. It was an extraordinary mission by all accounts, a joint venture of American and European space ventures. Cassini gave us first glimpses of Venus and then passed by our own moon on its way to the sixth planet in our solar system. Studying the rings that we have wondered out, we learned that they're not flat, but three-dimensional. We discovered that the moons have water and methane and could possibly support life. We learned that the water there forms not in circles, but in hexagons. And we saw hurricanes at both ends of the planet. Between that and the eclipse in August, I've been thinking about space and the stars, and I feel a kinship with the psalmist who said, "When I look at the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you have established, what are human beings? That you are mindful of us, mortals, that you care for us." We are in a season when I think we need to go out and look at the stars for a good long while. There's something healing about that. Annie Dillard reminds us that you don't have to sit outside in the dark. If, however, you want to look at the stars, you will find that darkness is necessary. But the stars neither require nor demand it. Maybe our souls require some stargazing these days. Going outside, preferably in the middle of nowhere, on a clear night, reminds us of the good rhythms of the night, the quiet unhurriedness of the evening. And if you can go outside in the dark and lie down on the ground and look up, you will be rewarded. The few familiar constellations might present themselves, the Dippers, Orion, the seven-sistered Pleiades may be out, and the swirl of the Milky Way may make itself known. To consider the work of God's fingers is to consider a master at the peak of his or her art. Some of the greatest scientific minds of our age have wondered at the artistry of the universe, and how we might be part of that picture. As Albert Einstein said, the human mind is not capable of grasping the universe. We are like a little child entering a huge library. The walls are covered to the ceilings with books in many different tongues. The child knows that someone must have written these books. It does not know who or how. It does not understand the languages in which they are written. But the child notes a definite plan in the arrangement of the books, a mysterious order which it does not comprehend, but only dimly suspects. Most of us are here this morning because we suspect, however dimly or brightly, that there is a mysterious order to life and creation, and that a being we call God has made that order. And when we contemplate the universe, and when we contemplate the omni aspects of God, omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, we can start to feel small and powerless. What are we human beings that God is mindful of us? It's an important tension. The tension between the majesty and grandeur of God and the small-minded weakness of humanity. The tension is important, like the tension of a violin string is important. Just right, the violin can play a note of great melancholy or great beauty. The tension between God's greatness and our smallness allows for the beauty of God's love to be played, a beauty that can produce a sadness when we realize how far short we fall of God's intention for us, or a beauty that shines through the smog and the smoke and the fog as we experience God's grace. Likewise, the universe can feel both simultaneously awe-inspiring and cold. The light we see is ancient, from stars that may be dead. We cannot breathe in space. We have no weight in space. We can get swallowed up by that vastness. And yet we human beings explored it anyway. We went out into the void, into that cold, immense dark, visited the moon, sent probes to other planets, and learned about creation itself, about neutrinos and atoms and dark energy and dark matter, about white dwarfs and red dwarfs and supernovas and black holes. And in learning about space and in learning about the stars, we learned through the efforts of elegant science that we human beings are made of the same stuff as the stars. We're part of the same creation. We are children of the same creator. And in the creator's grand scheme, we have been given a home, this planet we call Earth. When the first Apollo astronauts made it out into space and were able to gaze at their home from such a distant perspective, it changed them and it comforted them. John Glenn, a fellow Presbyterian, said, "I don't think you can be up here and look out the window as I did on that first day and see the Earth from this vantage point, to look out at this kind of creation and not believe in God. To me, it's impossible. It strengthens my faith. I wish there were words to describe what it's like. Truly awesome." Jim Lovell, captain of the fateful Apollo 13 mission, said this, "The most impressive sight I saw was not the moon, not the far side we never see or the craters. It was Earth. The Earth was the most impressive sight. As we came around the far side of the moon and saw the Earth come up over the horizon, we could see the only color in this part of the universe, the blues of the oceans, the white clouds, the tans, the pinks. I put my thumb up to hide the Earth completely. Then it dawned on me how completely insignificant we are. Everything I had ever known, my family, my country, my world, was behind my thumb. So there in the distance was this small body orbiting a rather normal sun, nothing so particular about it, tucked away on an outer edge of a galaxy we call the Milky Way. And I thought, how fortunate we are to live in this small body with everyone." From space, Earth looks so small, so manageable, its problems contained in this little blue and green marble we call home. On this planet we call home, we live with all these folks who, like us, were created little lower than angels. That should change things for us. I wonder if at the root of so much of the sorrow and suffering we are now experiencing, that at the root of that is our failure to see the stardust in one another, to see the near divinity in each other, to recognize what we have in common. We all need to breathe clean air. We all need to drink clean water. We all need to eat healthy food. We all need shelter from the elements and clothing that keeps us cool or warm. So we need to be good stewards of this earth and its resources. Beyond that, we need laughter and beauty. We need community. We need people who are willing to hold a mirror up to us so we can see the truth of our lives. We need compassion and empathy. We need generosity in one expression or another. We need wonder. We need curiosity. We need mystery. And we have been given all of that. Our gracious Creator, who made the ever-expanding universe and us, has given us everything we need. But we don't always deploy our resources in life-giving ways. We keep too much, more than we need, for ourselves and someone else goes wanting, or we give away too much. We give away too much of our souls for that which destroys, or we give away too much of our time to silly little things and there's nothing of substance left. We judge who is deserving of clean air and clean water and healthy food, and we forget about the rest. The planet is out of balance. Our stardust is hidden by the debris of our wastefulness. And yet it does not have to be that way. To go outside at night, to gaze at the stars, is to reset our perspective on things. It is to remember what a great thing time is and how every minute is an opportunity to love someone. To wonder at the heavens is to consider beauty, to be mindful of the beauty we hear in a song or in a baby's cry, in a note from a friend, the beauty that's in the person sitting next to you in the pew. And if I didn't think it would embarrass the heck out of everybody, I would ask you right now to turn to the person on your right and to turn to the person on your left and say, "You are beautiful. Thank you." "Oh, you did it anyway. Yes." "You are beautiful, Transept. You are beautiful, pastors. Thank you. Oh, you guys did it. I didn't think you would, and you did. You are beautiful. Thank you." Woo! I'm not done yet, though. Was that a little awkward? And was it kind of cool, Caroline? Of course it wasn't awkward, because you're so beautiful. Thank you. Dick Rohrbaugh, I know that was a little awkward for you. Welcome back. And for the people worshiping with us for the first time, you know, I don't make people do this all the time, but it's good to remember we're made of stardust. Isn't that amazing? I have to say, this was a very fun sermon to prepare because I got to look at images from the Hubble telescope and read about space exploration and read about this planet Earth and how it was made and then how it will end someday. There's a beautiful book by Ursula Goodenough, The Sacred Depths of Nature. And in it, she says, the sun has existed for about 4.5 billion years and has enough hydrogen to burn for another 5 billion. During its terminal phases, it's expected to become so hot that the Earth will turn into a cinder. I realize that someday all life on Earth will end. And when that happens, later rather than sooner, I hope, our bodies will turn to dust once again and go back to the stars from whence we came. Our souls will return to the heavens or to heaven, whatever that is, where we will take our place among the angels, little lower than God. Amen.